2022 or Death Howler brought us Season 3, Slash or Pass. It became the classic horror film podcast of its time. Now Death Howler brings us the most shocking season ever. Season 4, Dead or Dead.
Yeah, they're dead. They're all messed up.
Imagine, if you will, that one of the hosts is absolutely terrified of zombies.
So, what's the plan? Bash him in the head. That seems to work out.
Now, accept the fact there is no escaping this horror. Death Howler brings back the dead. Remember, when you're in Death Howler, listener discretion is advised. With hospitality like this, you'll never want to leave. We hope you stay alive.
When there's no more room in hell, the dead will walk the earth.
Everyone, welcome back to Death Holler. I am your host, the Reverend Dr. Death, and joining me as always is my co-host, La Urena. Urena, I'm running this monkey farm now.
I'm going home.
Goodbye, everybody.
And that's been a good show. Good night, everyone.
We have a bit of everything this episode. We do have a zombie short to discuss from the VHS series,
which I
had honestly forgot about.
I did too.
Time between the last recording and this one. The sequel to Wreck, and we are finally discussing the darkest of Romero's dead films. So grab your GoPro, maybe your crucifix, and ready the helicopter as we review A Ride in the Park, Wreck 2, and George A. Romero's Day of the Dead. But first, if you're enjoying the podcast, we would appreciate it if you would take the time to like, comment, and subscribe on whatever podcast platform you prefer. It helps us get more visibility on podcast listings and helps us grow. Also, consider following us on social media. You can find us on TikTok and Twitter under Death Holler Pod, and we can be found on Instagram and Facebook under Death Holler Podcast. We appreciate everyone who listens and hope you enjoy the show. Slash or Pass, VHS segment, A Ride in the Park. Tagline, one witness, one camera. Directed by Eduardo Sanchez from the Blair Witch Project and Greg Hale. Principal players, we have Jay Saunders, who plays the biker, who is a zombie GoPro cameraman, essentially. Devin Marie Saunders plays biker's girlfriend, who is his last link to humanity. Bette Cassatt plays the screaming girl, who it is too late to save, and she actually causes the zombie-ism to spread. Dave Coyne plays the Good Samaritan guy, who is the wrong place in wrong time, and Wendy Donegian plays the Good Samaritan girl, who's also in the wrong place whenever they happen upon the ailing cameraman who decides to eat their faces off. Quote, biker answering headset, "Hey, babe," biker's girlfriend, "don't hey, babe, me, Mike Sullivan. We're supposed to be having breakfast." Biker, "yeah, but it's a beautiful day. I just want to take the bike out for a spin." Biker's girlfriend, "I wanted you to take me for a spin, you know, ride that bike more. You know you ride that bike more than you ride me."
Ooh.
Damn. That is a
burn.
Scathing statement. This is just one part of VHS 2, I believe it is.
Yes.
What did you think of this, Urena, little segment?
It's so funny because when you mentioned it, my husband had literally just watched it. So, and I told him, I was like, hey, so Reverend says that there's like a zombie's point of view. And he's like, oh yeah, it was this one. And he hits rewind and here we are. And so I really like this one a lot. I've seen a lot of zombie shorts that were at the, I shouldn't say a lot. This would be the second one I've seen. I forget what the other one is called, but I think it's on YouTube. And it's also point of view from the zombie as well. I think it's a dad, honestly. God, I forget it. I'll have to ask Noah again what it was. But I like the zombie shorts. I feel like there's a lot of emotion in the zombie shorts. And there definitely was a lot at the one in this in the end.
Oh, yeah. Given how that they, the little girl's birthday party that they wrapped it up at and how the main character actually, that's one thing that I just want to bring up about it is that, like, it's one of the few times it's one of the few times I've seen the actual, like, from the zombie's point of view. I mean, it's, like you said, it's probably been done more often, but, like, this is one, you know, it's not as common as the other ways of showing zombie apocalypse. But, like, when the main character gets to the end of it and he's there's this girl that's like crying over her dad or somebody there, and she's been left. Everybody else at the party that who's still living booked it out of there, and for good reason. I mean, they were attacked by like 3 or 4 zombies that were semi-running, so it's not like they, you know, were the shambling type.
No.
And he's just been hit like by something. I can't even remember what it is, and like knocked backwards. And he's not moving as quickly as he was, and he has potential to go for her, but he gets a phone call from his girlfriend, the one from the beginning of the film that we just read the quote from. And in that moment, he realizes, looking at his phone, hearing her, and I guess seeing like a reflection of himself, just enough of his humanity comes back through that he goes in the other direction, grabs a gun, and just ends it. And that's that way of ending it was, to me, the novel part of it, in addition to the zombie GoPro stuff. Like, you don't really see that in most zombie films where they have any, like, sense, well, outside of the one we're going to discuss later, any sense that there's anything but their, you know, brains or flesh or whatever that they're going after, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what I love so much about zombie shorts is that you get so much and so little time, and they have to present this without looking like they tried to shove a bunch of things in all at once. But I mean, let's just go over briefly what I felt watching this. Definitely dread, because I knew what was going to happen. I knew this guy was going to turn into a zombie, but I didn't know how. So there was the dread. There was the, oh, this is just going to be a normal day kind of experience you get, because he's having a video chat with his girlfriend. No big deal. There's the actual scene where he gets attacked, which looks so good because I think he gets bit on the arm, if I recall that correctly. And it just...
I think so. And then she's also vomiting and stuff.
Yes. God. All of that. Okay. Then you have them going on an adventure, which was so cool to see, because he literally is just... It's like a pack of wolves, if you will, because they're kind of just following each other, but they're following each other towards the sound of other people. So...
Right.
You know, sound or smell or whatnot.
Because he makes it a little bit past where he gets bit at, and then he falls down on the ground, and then the two other zombies in the film, or humans at the time, they come up on him, and they, you know, they try to do the right thing. They're like, we need to call somebody, you know, and then, of course, he rises up, bites one of them on the face. The other one tries to get away. He bites at their arm or something like that. And, of course, they both turn, and then they're all a pack. Yes. Like you said, just kind of traveling together at that point.
They're just a little gangster gang, you know? Little zombie gangsters is what they are. And then you get the party and you're like, oh, fuck, this is going to be bad. The amount of people you see just bouncing and like leaving others behind is fucking hilarious, because I feel like that, I don't know, I'm a mom, so I might make sure my kids are safe, but I'm also extremely terrified of zombies, so I don't know if I would be that person. I think a dad made sure his daughters got into the van, so I think that would at least happen. But then he looks across the way, and there's a woman laying next to a body that is, it's going to turn, let's just be honest. And she's over there mourning the death, and I'm thinking, you dumb bitch, you might want to go. And then she sees the zombie look at her, and she gets up, and she slowly backs away. And that's kind of when one of the epiphanies he has, when he realizes this isn't right, and then, of course, seeing his girlfriend on the screen again.
Yeah, and, well, one thing I was going to say is having the GoPro was smart because obviously didn't have a high budget, you know, so it saves a lot on like just the budget constraints or whatever, because the GoPro records just well enough to where, I mean, and it's just fuzzy enough that like any special effects that weren't necessarily top tier kind of get like lost in the grain or whatever at the edges, but it's just good enough to kind of keep, you know, the image quality up enough to where you can, you know, tell what's 100%. Going on.
100%. Probably my favorite scene was when the zombie blasts himself in the head, which is all, did not expect that, honestly.
And then the whole helmet GoPro thing just goes rolling backwards and flips.
Flies in the air and lands, and you see the zombie laying down. And I said, that was good. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good way to have a punch at the end. Or 100%.
Yeah, this is a must-see. I know that you and the hubby, well, the hubby likes VHS. He's seen all of them. I don't think you have.
I think all of one, and I've seen segments of two, but I never really followed up with it after that because it's like most anthologies. There's a couple that are standout in the episode and whatever you're watching. A couple that are mediocre, one or two that's mediocre, and then there's one that's really, really fucking bad. And it's like the bad ones always kind of leave enough of a bad taste in my mouth that I'm like, I'm going to go watch something else for a while, you know?
Yeah.
It takes a very good horror anthology that it's not that way. Like Creepshow, I can't think of one thing in Creepshow that's bad. I mean, like they're all, you know, good to great in Creepshow. You get the Creepshow 2, a little bit more mediocre for some of the stuff, but it's still good overall. But I was like watching Tales from the Hood the other day on Tubi. That one's got some bad one. It's got at least one bad one in it. It's just like, okay, you gotta get through this one to kind of finish the movie out. But and I don't know, VHS really, there's a couple of them. There's one that I'm pretty sure it was from VHS. I could be thinking of the original Art the Clown anthology, All Hallows Eve or whatever, but there's one with like some kind of like alien or something at one point. I'm probably thinking of All Hallows Eve. That thing was so fucking bad, I barely got through it. It was like a painting and an alien, and I'm like, what the fuck am I watching? And I don't know. That's the problem I run into with anthologies. So, I don't know. I need to watch more VHS because a lot of people like them. Although I've heard Viral's not the best. That's one that's like later on that's more like streaming stuff or whatever. So,
you know, there's one other VHS I've seen, not related to zombie season. So, I apologize, guys. But this is Death Holler and this is horror. But it was really good. It was somebody that was stuck in a morgue, I want to say. Or maybe not even a morgue, but like where they hold funerals.
Okay.
I don't know what those are called. I don't know why you would think, as morbid as I am, that would be just like
a funeral home. I can think of.
Yeah. And there's something going on in the funeral home and the lights keep going on and off. And there's a morgue in the back where it's started. It's like this person got told, they must be like security guard or something. I'm thinking it was a security guard that was told to watch it and told that creepy stuff happens. And they're like, yeah, whatever. And that one was hella good. That was VHS as well. So, and I don't VHS. I feel so bad. My poor husband, he's very neglected. I think you guys know that already. He's always recommending good stuff to me. And then he's like, well, you guys are, you're reviewing it on Death Hall, or you watch it for Death Hall. Yes, I will do it for my show. Absolutely. We'll do it for my show.
You talking about the, I don't know, this tangent, whatever. He was talking about like the one the funeral home or whatever that started making me think of one of the American Horror Stories episodes, which that's very mixed. I mean there's some really bad ones in that, but one of them I liked it overall until it got to the ending, and then the ending fucking sucked. Was this about this young woman who's a mortician, and she goes inside of the morgue area, and there's a body in there, and for whatever reason she decides to fuck it because it's a hot dude, and for some reason it's able to get hard. It's a whole thing. Ew. But anyways, somebody it's all a setup because somebody was filming her, and like her life is destroyed after that because everywhere she goes, you know, necrophiliac, blah blah blah, and then like it just goes on from there. But like the everything, I mean, after that's pretty good because it just shows like no matter what she does, no matter what she tries to do to, you know, like do good, it's like people are like, is she that girl that fucked the dead body? You know, like it's like you're never going to live this sin down, you know?
Yeah. So
it was an interesting episode, although it was just, it's like, who thinks this shit up, you know?
Yeah. Anyways, so this is definitely a slash for me. Do I speak for you when I say, yeah,
it's definitely a slash. There's no pass to this one. It was very well executed. Mm-hmm. If this is not the highlight of VHS 2 or one of them, then mm-hmm. I would be surprised.
Yeah. Definitely go give it a watch. Watch all of the VHS. It's little shorts on there. My kids love it. They don't seem to like the new one. You can sound off in the comments if you've seen it and you want to talk shit about my kids. they were pissed. I think they saw the first one of the newest VHS, and they're like, hot garbage, nope, and they refuse to watch the rest of them.
That's the one called Beyond, right? That's like a sci-fi version that's like,
I think so,
aliens and all that?
I think so. Yeah, they were pissed. They were pissed. So, which is insane because there's so many different VHS segments. I don't understand why you would get mad at one and not continue watching. But you know what? They're kids. I don't know.
That again, that is the benefit and the curse of an anthology series. You can if you have one bad one, usually there's another one that'll catch your attention and you're fine after that.
So, yes.
We're gonna move on from that, but we both recommend it. Very good segment. To Wreck 2 from 2007. Tagline is Fear Revisited.
Okay, I like it. Yeah. You know, these fucking Spaniards know what the fuck they're doing. Like, I know that sounds biased because I'm half Spanish, but I'm just saying they're doing pretty good.
This movie in particular, like I said before when we was covering the other movies, Quarantine is okay with its scientific explanation, but I really love what Wreck 2 added to Wreck, and as far as like it really cemented that it's more supernatural, as in like demonic and all that, which I dig more, honestly.
Yeah.
I'm gonna let you read these names here. Who is this directed by?
Once again, Juame Balaguero and Paco Plaza.
Also written by
Juame Balaguero. I cannot say it. I'm saying it way too fast. It's because it's Spanish and not Mexican. Juame Balaguero, Manu Diaz, and Paco Plaza.
There you go. No music's associated with this one because they're smart and it's a found footage movie, so it shouldn't have. It's got a musical scene where they hear this creepy music playing on a record player, which is really well done. Reminded me kind of like Resident Evil, to be honest with you.
That was good. There was that. I swear to God, I have to rewatch part one because I'm telling you, they heard a music box or something.
They probably did. Yeah. I'm just saying that there's no official music playing, which makes sense. It doesn't make sense in a found footage movie to have music. It shouldn't be playing. Unless it's Savage Land and it's like some kind of, you know, thing after the fact where you're collecting all the stuff and then you can accept it. Made for a budget of $5.6 million, it made $18.5 million.
That's pretty good. It made more than triple the budget.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Or not more than triple, but almost triple.
Yeah. Principal players, we have Jonathan D. Mellor, who plays Dr. Owen, who is totally not a Vatican priest.
Mm-hmm. Quotation marks.
Oscar. Zafra, who plays Hefe, who's the leader of the SWAT team.
Jesus.
I mean, you know, that makes sense, Hefe. Ariel Casasis, I don't know, plays Lara, SWAT member who sent in on the secret mission. Mm-hmm. Pablo Rosso plays Rosso, SWAT member with a camera, who you remember is actually the guy who's the cameraman, yes. I believe, from the first Wreck movie.
Yes.
Makes sense that he would also be the one carrying the camera mainly in this one. Wreck 2, Wreck 3, Genesis, director of photography, Wreck 4, he was director of photography. He's basically the guy that they had. I mean, he was in the movie because they, you know, needed a good cameraman, and then he just moved up to actually doing, for the movies that are not found footage, he did, like, the overall photography.
That's kind of cool. Sense.
Alejandro Casaseca, plays Martos, another SWAT team member. Pep Molina plays Jennifer's father in this, which is interesting, which is what I love about this movie. It really rounds out the story mm-hmm. from Wreck, because you keep hearing about the dad being out there. He can't make it in. The little girl's, like, got the fever and everything, and the mom keeps saying, where is he at? He doesn't know where. It's like, okay, he knows, and he fucking does the stupid thing and makes his way inside the building and gets fucked over because of it, but that's fine. Julie Frabeas plays Fireman Jose, I guess is Julie is how you pronounce that, or Huli, or Huli, I don't know.
Yeah, but I'm like, these are, I mean, like, even in Spanish, I feel like these are, like, female names, in my opinion, but okay.
Yeah, yeah. Andrea Ross plays Mire, who's a stupid teenager. Alex Battalori plays Ori, who's another stupid teenager. There's a lot of them in this movie. Pal Pock plays Tito, who is the stupid teenager who actually becomes infected with the demonic virus. Farron Terraza plays Manu, who's the firefighter assigned to the show crew from the first movie, and he actually has, like, there's a past cameo bringing him back in, just mainly from, like, old video sake from the first movie. David Veritz plays Alex, the firefighter assigned to the crew from the first movie. Manuela Velasco returns as Angela or Gila or whatever you want to say, Vidal. And she has a much bigger role in this movie.
Yes.
And a much nastier role in this movie. Sucking down that grub worm thing and becoming.
No, I don't like it.
And then Claudia Silva plays Jennifer, the young girl who's infected in the first movie. And we get to see her again because that's one of the first infected they run into mm-hmm. is the little girl.
Which, man, they looked good in this movie. Also, I didn't see that you credited him, but technically the original person who was filming, although he's on SWAT now, he's a SWAT member with a cameraman, which is Pablo, Rosso. But Rosso actually is in this movie. It's just a different person playing him.
Actually, I want to say it. Yeah, it's either him or there's somebody it's somebody like him. But yes, because I want to say that the infected version of him shows up at some point.
Yes, it's the infected version.
Okay. And of course, his name's mentioned because that's another thing I love about this movie. Part one ends with Angela being pulled back into the darkness by the witch. Which is way creepier than fucking Doug Jones was in Quarantine, but we've already discussed that. But anyway, she gets pulled back, and then, like, you hear, and the last line is, we got to keep recording whatever she says, and that's actually the first line that you see in this movie, which is a good tie between the two of them. And then you get to actually see, towards the end of the movie, what happened to her. I like how they did that, too. I'm just going to say it. Like, you don't know what fucking happens to her, because when the SWAT team goes in, they go straight to the fucking top or the penthouse is where she disappeared, and she's nowhere to be fucking found. So it's like, okay, what happened to her? Did she die? Did, you know? And they hold it well until the very end of the movie when they need to show, like, that she's the ultimate infected in this whole fucking place. She is the witch now, basically.
Spoiler alert.
Synopsis.
Which we spoiled, I'm sorry, we spoiled in the first the episode of Wreck One when we because we
spoiled a lot in that one for this episode.
So this episode is short. It's because we discussed this kind of already a little bit.
Yeah. Synopsis: a SWAT team along with Dr. Owen is sent on a secret mission to recover an antidote to the virus that has been unleashed in the building. Which I love that too. Is that we also see the other side of it, where we see, like, you know, where they put down all the plastic and everything. We see the actual tunnel that they built for the other people outside to enter in the building, which was pretty cool seeing, you know, the other version of what was going on in the original wreck.
Yeah.
Unbeknownst to the SWAT members, Owen is really a Vatican priest who knows the cause of the virus and seeks the blood of the first possessed girl who was used to create it. While the team is trying to recover the blood, a group of stupid civilians also breaks in through the sewers to try to find their colleagues slash family. With pure chaos erupting all around them, what does the sudden appearance of Angela mean? There are some places that should stay closed forever, forever. And that's another tagline from the movie.
Okay. Let me get my brain scramble organized here. Does this movie, because I feel like I asked you this question already, did they have a plan of what they were going to do? I believe the word I used last episode was fumigate the building. But what were they planning on doing by keeping it quarantined off? Were they going to blow it up? Were they going to catch it on fire?
So that's the question. So if we go by the original movie, it was just to kill whatever tried to come out of it and be done with it. This movie hints that the Vatican was secretly installed in other places outside the building. So what was their motive? What were they going to do? I mean, because their whole purpose was not to immediately just go in there and wipe all the people out, obviously. It was to collect that blood so that they could finally get the vaccine that they were trying to make that got fucked over in the process. So I don't know. It's almost like you have two... Like, there's a shadow organization outside that is not telling other people what their intention is. So I don't know. I think this mission was doomed from the get-go because there was too many people with too many different conflicting agendas going on, basically.
Well, yeah, because when you're talking about the teenagers going in because they got family members, I could 100% see Nona trying to do that. My daughter is dumb. She's fearless, and she's dumb. She's too young to be smart. She would be like, I can get my mom.
The teenagers make sense. The extra fireman trying to find his other fellow fireman and the father. Mm-hmm. I get why they would want in there, but at the same time, they seemed a little too stupid for their own good.
Yeah. I mean, the problem is they say that you don't tell people what's happening because you don't want mass hysteria. We understand that. We've discussed this multiple times. But this is also what happens when you don't tell people what's going on, or at least give an idea of how serious it is, because then you're going to get people that are like, they're gonna want to go, and they're going to be like, well, it can't be that bad.
That's true. And then they get in there, and it's even worse than anybody ever thought. One thing I did love about this movie, there's a lot of things, but one thing, I mean, it continues even little things that they mentioned in Wreck 1. Like, now that I'm remembering it, Wreck 2, in Wreck 1, they tell Angela and them, one of the people in the building, that there was a exit to the sewers in the lower part of the building. Yes. And that's where they were trying to get to, but they got trapped up in the penthouse because the zombies forced them up that way. This movie actually shows you that there was an exit.
Yes.
And that it was being monitored, of course. And the teenagers brought attention to the fact that they hadn't sealed it off yet. And of course, the smart thing to do is to weld it shut. And that's what they do. And that nobody can get out now. I mean, that's the one exit they had. So
I still feel like sewers just branch off to so many different areas that, okay, so you blocked that one off. But... and even if the movie shows, oh, well, but then there's no way for them to get to the other areas, I don't believe that. I don't fucking believe
it. So, that might be the case. Now, here's the thing. This movie, I could see them being able to effectively seal off the building, even though it's, you know, with the demonic thing, the demon can figure its way out of the building, which it does.
Obviously.
But Quarantine, the U.S. version, which was based upon just a rabies virus that even rats had, how are they going to keep them out of the fucking sewers?
Yes.
That shit had already spread before got there.
We definitely discussed that.
That I know, but it just makes no fucking sense how they were going to do anything in the American version to keep that tamp down, because the fact that the rats had it meant that everybody was going to have it. Anyways. Before we discuss too much more about the movie.
Yes, we're getting too excited.
Other taglines, just one witness, a video camera. Eh, whatever.
Yeah.
Experience fear.
Okay.
That sounds like a tagline from Universal Studios.
Just going to say that.
This might be from the first movie. The movie that inspired Quarantine, that's probably from the first movie, so I don't know how that this one technically applies to that, because this was made at the same time as Quarantine. And then Trapped, No Mercy, No Escape, No One Gets Out Alive.
That's TLDR, and it's not, I don't know where it's going. There's too much.
Yeah. The only quote is the one from the beginning that was also the one from the end. Angela, we have to tape everything, Pablo, for fuck's sake. And then, you know, then it goes into the hell that is this movie. I like the visuals in this movie better than the first one, because the camera quality, and I don't know, and that logically it makes sense to me that the SWAT team members would have better, well, maybe not better than Angela. I mean, she should have, I mean, as a film crew, they should have had a pretty good one. But the fact that theirs was stable, like GoPros on their suits, I could see more in this movie. I don't know if you felt the same way, but the lighting sources were better in this movie. I could see more of what was going on.
Now that you mention it, because the one thing I was thinking about is how similar it looked to the other film, but that's with the graininess of the films. That's not so much the lighting. You're right. The lighting was way better. It didn't feel like, when you turned around, you could definitely see what was coming at you, but it wasn't so bright that it wasn't scary.
Yeah, there was just enough shadow to kind of cover up and make it worse. The other thing is, too, is this movie had a lot more helicopters and stuff kind of providing lights, which Quarantine does, but the original Wreck doesn't have that so much. So, like, this one also benefited from both the soldiers having stable light sources on them to light up the areas where they're at, but also the helicopters above them and, you know, all that. I really like the story in this one a lot.
Yeah.
I mentioned that on the previous episode or previous one about Wreck. This to me makes Wreck a better movie, because it adds to the story and makes it more than, because if you compare just Quarantine and Wreck, I almost lean toward Quarantine because it's better filmed. Of course, it would be higher budget, you know, made after the fact, whatever. But this goes back and retroactively improves the story from Wreck, which is why I like the combination of, I feel like Wreck 1 and Wreck 2 are basically one movie. I mean, and they are when you watch them. I mean, they're so intertwined in how they work. I mean, even like zombies you see in that are made in Wreck end up becoming or coming back and being problems in Wreck 2. Specifically Angela, I mean, toward the end, which is funny because the way she pops up just out of nowhere, which is really well done, and she's not really, there's nothing zombie about her whenever she pops up, was really a good
perfectly way to spin that. Yeah, it's you know, the thing about this movie is it filled a lot of holes. That's what she said. yet added to the story. I don't even feel like it added to the story. I feel like the story was there. This is just the fat of the story, the meat of the story that we didn't quite get from the first one. So I do love that so much. I also like how it technically told two versions of the same story in this one movie. We got two different point of views, kind of.
Oh, you're talking about from like the SWAT team members and from the teenagers?
Yes.
And, you know, you kind of, and I like how it does that too, because it stops midway, shows you the teenagers, how they got in there, and then you see the two of them collide after that.
Yeah.
Here's my proposal to you on this though. What if, and I could see this being the case, and I think this is even more like brilliant for the writers of these movies. What if part one was the way they were originally going to write it? It got so famous I think this is actually how it happened, that they ended up making a part two, and they saw the gaps in the story and wrote and filled them in and basically retconned and made the story better after the fact. Like, they just, they basically went back and said, okay, now that we got a budget, what can we take from the first movie and embellish upon?
Yeah.
And that's what they did.
Which is smart.
I think the skill in that and what they did is amazing.
Because it
looks like you said, it looks like they had the idea for that story. They just didn't like put it all in the first movie. But I think what they did was they just looked back and said, hey, this fits in. Let's add this, you know, to, at this point.
Yes. And as you kind of to elaborate on what you're saying, excuse me, is usually when we get a sequel, it's like, no, fuck this story. This is what we're going to go with. And then it's like, you fucked it up. You done fucked up. Where this one was like, nope, this was good. This worked. Now let's expand on it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I can't use that. I was going to say Halloween 1 and Halloween 2 where they added in the fact that, you know, Jamie Lee Curtis was the sister, but there's a lot of people that likes that little fill-in, even though Carpenter himself doesn't like it. But we'll leave that alone because that's a whole...
Yeah, me and you fight on that shit all the time because I'm totally okay with her being a sister. I will die on that hill, and I know you're like, no!
I think it's fine. I mean, it works. It's just one of those things where people like swear up and down that it adds so much to the story, and I'm like, I don't know that it does, but I think if he was just a Stone Cold killer, just chose her because she was there, I think that's just as good, but whatever. This movie does it differently, though. This movie does it differently, though. It embellishes upon everything that was in the first movie. And just, like, it even takes the fact, I mean, because they did hint at this in the first movie. They did show the pictures of the church stuff, you know, in the penthouse, and talk about the religious elements and all that stuff. So they had an idea that's what they wanted the virus to be, but they actually cement that in this movie. Like, I mean, with all the other stuff they add. And I love that stuff that they play into supernatural-wise, saying in the first movie that that room that Pablo and Angela end up in, they could only end up in because they were traveling in darkness using the night vision camera. Because that room doesn't actually exist in our reality. It's only in darkness.
That was one of my favorite scenes. That was pretty cool, which you already told me about, so I already knew about it. But when it happened, it was a lot better than I expected.
Especially when they go in there and there's that water-filled, like, thing or whatever that the witch pops out of and, like, attacks them. Yeah, that was real.
Fountain? Not a fountain, but, like, a... I don't even know what that was. I have to see, because although we talked about the lighting being better, that was kind of hard for me to see.
The one thing that it reminded me of is, like, you know, if you take a sarcophagus, you know, and you filled it with water, that's what it looked like. I don't know what it was supposed to have been otherwise, but that's what it looked like, you know. But I like that element of it. I also like the element of it to where they get the blood, they go through all that trouble, there's actually a vial still buried in the ceiling, of all things, with all those creepy kids that they have to, that the soldier has to get away from. And they get down and they start doing the ritual, and they do it too closely to the actual vial. And it makes total sense to me. Okay. So if you're sitting there and you're saying these words that are going to make this like blood, like catch on fire, why wouldn't the vial also catch on fire? Because it's still in proximity to where you're saying the speech. You know what I'm saying? Like that he had the little petri dish that had blood on it that he was going to set fire to prove that it was the demons.
Okay.
But they didn't take the vial of blood out of the room or anything like that. So he's still in proximity. So if the power of Christ is what's setting this on fire, well, I mean, Christ is God, so we're a version of God. So, like, that's also obviously 5 feet away going to set fire to the fucking vial, too. I mean, it's in the same fucking room.
Okay, but here's where I am dumb and I would do this, is that petri dish, was it covered or was it exposed?
It was, but so was the vial, because they had just unstopped it to pour it into the, they, all they did was, like, pull the stopper out, pour it into the petri dish, step back for a second, and the priest started doing the little incantations. Both of them were open, I believe, at that moment. Okay,
that makes sense, because I'm like, I feel like if they were closed, it's still...
Even if they were, it's the power of God. Like, it's going to blast through a fucking court stopper. I'm just saying, like, it makes sense to me. It's like, okay, and it actually makes me mad, because how many other movies do they not figure that in? It's just like, oh yeah, that other thing's fine, because it's not immediately right beside him. It's like, who's the power behind this incantation? Who are we saying is? I mean, if you said Loki, then I might believe it, but you're saying God. That's a little bit power scale level difference. I mean,
I don't know. My dumb ass would be like, it's safe in here.
But I thought that was pretty good. Then of course the priest is like, we've lost all the blood. There's none of it left.
Yeah.
The other thing that's brilliant in this movie is just the way that they end the movie with Angela revealing what she is and then speaking. Cause the priest is like, you can't get out of here. And she's like, oh, I can't.
Oh, bitch. And you thought she starts
speaking his voice. Cause that's one thing they set up throughout the entire movie, is that he can only leave if he gives the verbal consent and it's recognized upon his voice speaking patterns and all that. Well, what have we always found out in demonic movies? They can imitate people's voices, and that's what she does. And it's like, oh, you just fucked up, son. Like, that, there's no help for you at this point. Like, the demon outsmarted you, and that's exactly what happened.
Well, that's what they're supposed to do. Demons are like little evil scholars, if you will, and they know some shit. And they don't just know shit in the textbooks, they're also street smart, which is a double-edged sword.
Yeah, I mean, and especially for these priests that, I mean, even if they have studied like the Bible and all that, I mean, how much deception, street smarts and all that do they really know? I mean, that's like, I can't remember the name of the movie, but it's like The Day of the Beast, I think is the name of it, and we talked about it in a previous season, where this priest is trying to stop the devil from like starting the apocalypse, and he doesn't know anything about how to sin. So he goes out and he has to learn to try to get in proximity to the devil. And to summon him, he has to go around sinning, and he has to learn how to sin from other people. And it's the most hilarious thing ever, because he has to go up to people and he's like, what do you do? And it's like, well, I masturbate all the time. And so that's what he does, you know, stupid shit like that.
Yeah.
So.
Oh my God. I remember you telling me about that too.
But yeah, I love the story in this movie. It is so well done. Like, I mean, and like you said, the break in the movie where they actually show the other group. And the way that they have the two groups interact was that they have, I think it's Rosso, the cameraman, the new SWAT cameraman, actually ends up like being attacked like near where the teenagers are at, and he just decides to take himself out because with a pistol, because he knows that, I mean, you know, since he's been bit, there's no real chance of him surviving. So I don't really blame him in that instance. Acting wise, what do you think of the movie?
Excellent as usual, because I didn't feel like these were actors. I felt like these were people that were being filmed.
Yeah, even the priest, I mean, who had to deliver probably the most like non-found footage dialogue options, I guess you could say. I feel like he did a pretty good job too.
The teenagers surprised me, because I kind of didn't expect them to be as convincing, if you will. Like, I almost expected them to feel like they were acting.
They played stupid teenagers pretty well.
They played stupid teenagers, but I didn't feel like they were acting behind a camera. It felt like they were just really being filmed.
Oh yeah, that they were just being goofy kids that were filming each other with like a cell phone or whatever they had at the time.
Yeah.
Which that is a good thing about the movie, is that there's two different video sources. And I like the fact that once the soldiers start running out of battery or whatever, then they end up like they pick up another camera. I don't know. I think they try to pick up the one from Angela, I believe it is, later on, and they actually see footage that she filmed prior to. And that's the one that they used to find the dark room, which was a cool little twist.
Yeah.
Whatever. they used Pablo's original camera.
Yes.
And then, of course, there's no music in the movie, which is amazing because there shouldn't be, except for that one. And it's so well done. That little creepy music starts playing. And they're like, yes. What the fuck is that? Where'd that coming from?
Yeah.
Trivia for this movie. A lot of the zombie shrieking was added in post-production. To shoot with numerous actors shrieking constantly would have meant that all the dialogue would have been drowned out.
Yeah.
Adding it in afterward meant that the sound technician could manipulate it to its best advantage. They could, you know, like lower it so that you could hear the other people. Well,
that makes sense. That was one of my complaints from the first film, was that when there was too many people kind of talking at once, it was hard for me to understand or even translate from Spanish to English, you know, what was going on. And that was one of my biggest issues, was there was just too much vocal stuff going on. And it was mostly people just kind of screaming and making noise while two people were having a conversation, and I did not like that. Nope, we lost each other there for a second.
Read the dialogue. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now, yeah.
Okay. What I was going to say, my biggest complaint from the first movie was that the dialogue was moving too quickly for me to read and see the action. I didn't have this problem with this movie. They paced it out well enough to where I could read what they were saying, and the action was, you know, still, I could still like flip back and forth, you know, like down at the bottom of the screen, back up to what was going on well enough to where I didn't have that problem.
Yeah, that was definitely way better than the first film, for sure.
The SWAT team, police, and crowd of onlookers outside the building were real people, not actors. Mm-hmm. The actors playing the special forces team were giving a day's intensive training in how to handle firearms.
Okay.
The constant presence of helicopters buzzing overhead was created entirely by the sound team. The production couldn't afford real helicopters.
Smart. I like it.
In the first film, the cameraman's name was Pablo, while in this film, the cameraman is named Rosso. And in fact, the guy's name is Pablo Rosso.
Yes.
He played both parts.
That's so funny.
A lot of the footage in the film was actually shot by the actors playing the Special Forces team, as they all had helmet-mounted cameras. And I think that the way that it was stabilized because it was on the helmet was way better, in my opinion.
Oh, way better, yeah.
The directors were very keen to give the film the additional vibe of a first-person shooter video game, where the audience feels personally drawn into the action on the screen. For that reason, the barrel of a gun is in the foreground of a lot of the shots.
Yeah, I did notice that. And then the way that the people fly back when they got shot, the zombies, per se, was just like in the video games, too.
Yeah, there's little things that they did in this movie that like I said, it really is, to me, better than the first movie, and makes the first movie better just because it's so good.
Yeah.
Manuela Velasco wears all the original clothing that she wore in the first movie, covered in blood and whatever else they put on her.
Oh, yeah.
That is the original, what do they call that in a movie? Whenever it's your clothing, it's not props. It's, I can't remember the name of it. It's something like costume, but anyways, it's all of her original clothing. So that's pretty good that they did that. A much bigger production than its predecessor. This employed over 300 extras, which is a lot.
Wow.
Alejandro Casaseca, who plays Martos, is a comic actor in sitcoms and TV shows, and this is his first serious role that he ever did. A problem the production encountered when filming for the sewer sequence was that the temperature difference compared with the above ground made the camera lenses all steam up instantly whenever they went down into the sewers, which is kind of funny. And several actors from the first film reprised the roles, mostly briefly appearing as infected people, versions of their characters, which I love.
That was awesome.
You don't really see that kind of continuity between movies.
Oh, yeah.
And then finally, Brazilian distributors added possessed to the title, giving away the supernatural aspect of the outbreak, which would piss me off because, honestly, it was the little bit of, I mean, they kind of hinted at the first movie when they really went into it with this movie. That was kind of like the M. Night, what the twist, you
what
know,
the
that,
twist.
That, kind of, that came out of it. What is your rating for this movie?
Oh, this was a good one. Do you remember what I rated Rec 1?
I do not remember. I want to say it was in the 4 range, but I could be wrong.
I think
one
it
of
was
them got
just
a 4, and then The other one got like slightly below it because Quarantine and Wreck are kind of pretty much the same movie anyways.
Yeah, I think I might have done Quarantine slightly higher. Oh, God, I can't remember. Because I do know, I do remember this, that I liked the storyline of Wreck, but I liked the execution of Quarantine. And I believe those were my exact words.
I think we both were in that kind of boat. So, yes. Yeah.
So this one, I'm going to give this one a 4.7 because this one had not only the good storyline, but the amazing execution. It was a double-edged sword. It really brought it. I mean, is it a perfect film? No, that's hard to come by, although I've been handing those out a lot this season. Clearly, I like being scared to death and having nightmares. So yeah, this one's a lot higher for me. Everything from how they handled the dialect, meaning it was paced a lot better. The lighting was better. The cameras were better. The story was just juicy. We had two different views that kind of, I normally don't really like that in movies because I feel like it makes it long and it's like, fuck, we're back to this again. And it was not, it was exciting. It was almost wanted. So it's damn near perfect.
So I was originally going to give this 4.5 and then you brought all that stuff up and I want to give it closer to what you're saying. So I'm going to go 4.6 with the option in future viewings of taking it even higher than that. Cause it's at least a 4.5. I mean, it's at least that. That's the bottom of the area where I feel like it needs to be at. And there's a part of me that wants to give it a 5, but I can't say that without watching it more times and kind of getting that point of view.
Yeah.
So, still, I mean, and it's all the same reasons you said. Like, I really, like, whenever I saw what they did with the story and how they beefed it up, I was just like, man, this is how you do a fucking sequel. You don't pull that shit where it's like you retcon something. I mean, even if the stuff they did in this was a retcon, it doesn't feel or appear to be a retcon. It's like it was like, okay, they knew they were doing this, and I don't think that was the case, but they made it look that way, which is amazing. Go ahead.
Nothing. I was just thinking, too, I don't remember what I rated Quarantine. It had to be pretty good because I like that movie, but this one definitely is higher than Quarantine. I would actually reverse my score.
it's for sure better than Quarantine. I mean, it's this movie to me, it's hard if you just watch Wreck and Quarantine because, like we said, Quarantine is the superior movie as far as the filming of it. It's just that whenever you watch this movie, you're like, Quarantine has such a shit resolution in the end that this one like totally like blows out of the water. So, I mean, it really affects the score on Quarantine when you've seen Wreck 2.
Yeah.
I think that's enough for this one.
We discussed it so much in the first one that it was like,
yeah, we kind of, I mean, there's probably things that we've said multiple times. It was just like, I was geeking out over it when I watched it. I was like, man, I can't not talk about this movie.
Yeah,
but anyways, we are going to cover in the next episode Day of the Dead from 1985, not those fucking terrible remakes that came out after the Dawn of the Dead, you know, Zack Snyder film came out. We don't speak of those movies. They don't exist. They can go burn in hell. And they're not going to come back from hell and walk the earth. They're going to stay in hell. That's where they're going to be at. But join us next time for that. And with that, peace be with you.
And with your spirit. Where's the music?